Talk 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty. Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM. Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Wednesday the 16th of March and this is Game On. Coming up today, Ruby reviews a successful day for the Irish at Cheltenham.
Two from the finish, and Ergami jumps to the lead. Edouard Alin into the bottom is now pressed by Fernando Sibila as Ergami heads down towards the last. Ergami is over clear and racing away up the hill. The Queen Mother champion chase. It's the 81st win and the best all for Willie Mullins. But it's the first in this race as Ergami beats Fernando Sibila.
It's another big night in the Champions League and Premier League. David Sinead is in studio. In Camogie, Aoife Murray is with us, as is Dublin manager Adrian O'Sullivan. And in ladies football, Nadine Doherty sets up for the league semi-finals. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. I'm delighted to say that David Sinead of the 42 is with us here in studio. David, the last I heard from you, you were on a big road trip to Donegal, to Finn Harps. You're back.
I'm back. I'm back in one piece. Although, in fairness, coming over the M50 here later on today, I felt as if I was back on a longer trip, yeah.
You did a great piece for the 42. You went Thank up you. In the car with a couple of the Finn Harps players and just heard their story, gave a bit of an insight into what life is like for players who are not playing in the Premier League or the Champions League, just the regular footballers who are making their living playing in the League of Ireland and doing their job.
Yeah, that's right. Like Dave Webster and Bastian Hardy were the two lads who I went up with, and it's actually interesting. I was just actually chatting to one of your colleagues yesterday about a Raf Diallo as well, and I'm actually just really pleased that the piece seems to have been well received by a lot of people. A few people have got in touch, and even a few players, like one of the people who was mentioned in the article is on Doyle Pat. So basically Finn Harps were going up to play St Patrick's Athletic in Ballybofey, and the two lads who are based in Dublin basically travelled up the day before the game for training up to Letterkenny. Got a 3-hour drive, and they travel back to Dublin that night. They both worked then during the day on the Friday before travelling back up to Donegal again for the game, and they ended up getting beaten 2-0. It was almost a perfect trip because Dave Webster hit the post with an absolutely brilliant half volley in the first half, and then the rebound came back to him, and then he was joking in the car afterwards saying he killed one of the sheep behind the goal. But I know it was just like the timing of it, even how it coincided with everything that's happening at the moment there with Chelsea, and even just see today, like the Chicago Pubs family, the Ricketts, are going to put a bid in for Chelsea with everything that's going on with Abramovich and the sanctions that are happening. I just thought, even worked out like as a bit of a juxtaposition with what's going on in just football and the state of flux, and you see the amount of the levels of attendances that are seem to be happening around the league, and people really coming out in force and actually supporting local football, and it does seem to be a bit of a buzz. Like on Monday night, it was at Richmond Park for St Pat's against UCD, and it was over 2,500 people there, or close to 2,500 people there for a Monday night against UCD. It just seems like an incredible an amount. And even up when I was up in Finn Harps talking to people around the club and the volunteers around the club, like they have this deal on for season tickets for children for €5 for the yearly, and just the impact that's had, where they're seeing kids literally dragging their parents now to Finn Park. Now hopefully at last, because they've had a bit of a bad start to the season, they got beaten again there in the derby against Sligo, so they are bottom of the table. But I just hope if there were people reading that article on the 42, just it kind of just gives a sense of lads who are from completely different parts of the world, and yeah, here they are in a car together travelling up. Like Bastian Harry was on the books at PSG as a kid, got released. I remember him as joking, saying, actually didn't use it in the article, which in hindsight was an absolute disaster, but saying how Ronaldinho was his absolute football god, and he had just left PSG before he kind of maybe got a chance to even be around him at the same time. And yeah, like 10 minutes, lead the way 10 minutes from Disneyland Paris, and like he has this thing where a lot of his friends are getting jobs in Disneyland because that's the easiest, the biggest employer in the area, but he wanted football, and he's just travelled that, he's just made that journey for himself with the Sheffield Wednesday, was in the lower leagues in England, and now he's been around the place with in the League of Ireland, like 6 different clubs, played up with Linfield as well, and just that came true, just that, like, they are doing this for the love of the game. And it might sound a bit naive to say it, because obviously they do have to make a living as well, and the money does obviously get paid for this as well, but the travelling that's there, and the just like this, the stress it puts on their bodies, like you're saying, like even the fact that he feels as if he can only drive in flip flops because his feet are so bunged up, you know. And yeah, they share the driving duties, and it was just nice. It was just nice to actually, well, literally be able to sit back and enjoy the car journey and see, listen to the two lads bounce off each other, and hopefully it came across in the article.
Yeah, I really did. It's so worth checking out on the 42. So look, I see, all right, that the attendances are really good everywhere, and it does raise the question, why aren't people watching it on the TV though?
It's a good point.
The $1 million question, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
Because, yeah,
you know, there is so much hype, even like before the opening game of the season, all the Damien Duff stuff, everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
Games were sold out. I was in Tala on Friday night, sold out, packed, great night. But the figures on the telly aren't reflective of what's happening in the grounds.
Like at the moment, like, and it's a fair point, and it's something that obviously at the moment I'm in the process of looking into and trying to speak to people from. Like, part of it would be like, are people who love the League of Ireland and who are actually going to games. You know, you see what happens with LOE TV and the packaging with the FAI, and the kind of the consistency of coverage is a big aspect of this as well, in terms of growing that. Like, we've continually beating the drum in terms of if attendances and just overall structures in the League of Ireland to improve, it's going to be a cultural thing that takes years. It's not going to happen overnight. And if you're to relay it to what's the behemoth that has happened in the Premier League and how that's developed, you look at how Sky Sports has just changed the face of English football, and that's come from consistency of coverage, constant, where on obviously Sunday, the Super Sunday football, the Monday night football, people know what their fix is going to be. You have it now on a Saturday, the different time structures. Like, there has to be a niche, there has to be a way of finding that from winning the League of Ireland, and the best way of actually operating that. But then hand in hand, what can't be forgotten is that what's so crucial to League of Ireland, especially at the moment when there is, say, no big TV money coming in, what's the best way of maybe adapting and working around that? Main one is, and I can't be denied, is maintaining attendances and increasing attendances. That brings you into a whole different discussion, not just around, say, coverage and that consistency of coverage, but also, well, stadiums, can they be improved? And like, this is stuff that has been spoken about for years, and the big problem, and the big, not so much problem, but the big issue will be, is that these same topics aren't what's being spoken about in another 10, 15, 20 years, and that hopefully you see the FAI, obviously with their strategic plan as well for next while and for the next year, are going to be in the process of pretty much going to League of Ireland grounds and going around the place and seeing, well, what has to happen next, and how can it be moved forward, and how is this, can an actual plan be put in place directly for the League of Ireland, not just within the framework of what has to be done for the FAI, but for the League of Ireland. And like, so you see so much else that's happening with the youth structures and all the rest of it, but like, it's a generational thing, this, and it needs to be treated as such, whereby it's not just a case of, well, let's throw something at it for a couple of years, and if that doesn't work, well then, we're back to square one. There has to be a kind of a short, medium term, long term planning and objectives put in place, and slow and steady. Like, that's that might not sound glamorous to people, but that's what needs to happen.
Okay, well, it's something we will no doubt talk about again and again. But now it is time for Cheltenham. And just before we came on air, I caught up with Ruby, and he reflected on today's action in Cheltenham.
Game on.
Racing.
Ruby, a good day?
Yeah, lovely day for me, Marie. I was sat in my TV truck all day, so I didn't get soaked like everybody else here in Cheltenham. It hasn't stopped raining since 11 o'clock. God knows how much rain is at the fallen here this afternoon. And it's meant there was a big, massive delay to the start of the bumper, because when they took the hurdles out of the track, all the holes where the hurdles had been filled straight up with water. So we had lying water on the track, so they've had to reroute the bumper horses onto different parts of the course here. So the bumper horses didn't leave the parade ring for the bumper until 5:36. The race was supposed to start at 5:30. So, yeah, it's been an interesting day here, but the highlight for me was definitely Enna Grameen.
I thought you were going to say that, and you could actually see afterwards how emotional Willie Mullins was, which is a rare enough thing. So what was it about the race that really seemed so special?
I think he was that emotional, Marie, because that was the one big race that was missing from his CV. I mean, he's won the Grand National with Head Hunter, Gold Coast and Albion Photo, countless champion hurdles, stairs hurdles. He's dominated the scene in Ireland for many years, but like, he's born and bred into horse racing, and he has now won everything there is to win as a National Hunt trainer. He's done things that his dad never did, and he was a complete admirer of his dad, and all he ever wanted to do was emulate him. And now he's definitely exceeded whatever Paddy achieved, and it was a massive thing for him personally. I mean, I know him. I'm 42. I worked for him since I was 16. I know him a long time. I never saw him show emotion like that before, but it was great to see that something could mean so much to him. So, look, he was a wonderful boss for me when I was riding. I still walk with him, and he's a great friend. So I was, yeah, delighted for him. I think a lot of people saw a different side to Willie Mullins this afternoon.
Yeah, big time, I'd say. There's a lot of people talking about it because, as you said, it's such a rare thing because usually he's so matter-of-fact about everything, but you could see definitely how much it meant to him. But the race itself, Ruby, it was set up to be one of the greatest races with Siskin in it and Shaq and Persuad as well, but it didn't actually end up being that.
Yeah, look, Siskin never turned up. I don't know what happened to him or what went wrong, but he was never at the races, never going. But look, Paul Townsend changed tactics from Mascot, dropped Siskin in at the, or Penogamine in at the back, and it worked out. It worked out beautifully for him, and it was a magic performance.
And what about Shaq and Persuad? Willie did mention him afterwards as well, and disappointed for Patrick.
Yeah, Shaq and Persuad, I don't know what he did. He just didn't get hung enough, and when he landed and he knuckled and his nose hit the ground, and that sent Patrick straight out over his shoulder. So there was very little Patrick could do, but Shaq and Bourgeois really seemed to be enjoying themselves. So, yeah, it was disappointing for those, but that's horse racing. I know better than most people. You don't win if you don't jump the fences.
Yeah, and what about Tiger Roll? I know Energamine was a highlight, but that race between, that finish between Tiger Roll and Delta Work was pretty spectacular, but it was Delta Work that came out on top. Tiger Roll not getting that fairy tale.
I know, and for connections, like to own Delta Work, same trainer, same owner, but for the whole thing, for their horse to be the ones that went and beat Tiger Hall. And they were 21 lengths clear of the third horse. Look, it was a fabulous race. It showed the honesty, I suppose, of, or the integrity of the Elliott outfit, because Delta Work ran on his merits and went and beat Tiger Hall and denied the horse of a lifetime a fairy tale result. Look, it was, I suppose, Murray, I, like everybody else that was here, wanted the fairy tale. We were hoping Tiger Roll would pull out some more, but Delta Walk's a very good horse who took the cross-country racing really well, and Jack Kennedy gave him a lovely ride. But it was a little bit disappointing that it wasn't Tiger Roll who won the race.
Yeah, it just shows you don't always get that fairy tale ending all right, but still a magnificent race. The day got off to such a good start, Ruby, for really with Sir Gerhard and Paul Townend in the Ballymore.
Yeah, it did, and he travelled so well, jumped absolutely beautifully. Journey with me went along in front of him. And look, it was only a matter of whenever Paul Townend decided he wanted to go on Sir Gerhard. We hoped he would be that good, Marie. He jumped like a stag, travelled really well, and I think he got Irish punters back on track here, Marie. They were a bit shaken here early doors yesterday, but they definitely got on the front foot this afternoon with Sir Gerhard.
Yeah, even for Paul himself, you could tell afterwards he was quite relieved to get the win. It was a bit of an unknown.
Yeah, he was relieved. I mean, the race didn't go the way he would have wanted to. Sir Gerhard was quite keen. And when things aren't working out for you, it is a relief when you do get across the line in front and the pressure's off, you're winner ridden. And not that you can enjoy it, but it's just that the whole meeting's not going to be a disaster. You've had a winner. And that's a big thing. And, you know, he was out there in the minute of the meeting and dropped him in stone last. So, like, it does, success does give people confidence, and you could see that in Paul Townsend this afternoon.
Yeah, for sure. And you could also see the confidence of Charlie Dutch in the Browns advisory on La Homme Presse. Another really lovely story.
Yeah, La Homme Presse was impressive. He jumped really well. Obviously, Paul Nichols was quite annoyed about the watering that took place overnight, and then with all the rain that fell on top of the ground, and he withdrew Brave Man's Game. But La Homme Presse jumped from fence to fence for Charlie Dutch. Venetia Williams had opted to run him in this race instead of tomorrow's Turners, where he would have flashed against Galloping Deschamps and Bob Hollinger. But it was a good call from Venetia, because La Homme Presse was really good.
And what about the Coral Commander in Fleet, Shane Fitzgerald and Gordon Elliott, and a 50-1 horse to win that? A lot of happy Irish people, I'd say.
Yeah, I don't know, Marie. I was unfortunately, where I am in the ATV truck, I can't tell you who's happy or upset. I might as well be. I'm in the car park, so it could be anywhere. But it was a good result, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Ruby, let's very quickly look at Thursday. I know you're really busy there, but we'll just very quickly go through tomorrow's big races. So let's start with the Turners, Novices, Chase and Bob Olinger and Galopin Deschamps.
Yeah, look, it is a match. There's only four runners. And it is a match, a dead match between the two of them. I'm in the Gallop and the Champ camp. I think the Rame will really have helped his case as well. He's definitely a strong stayer. I think it'll come down to jumping. And Gallop and the Champ is just a more natural jumper of the pair. I think jumping has made him a better horse and a faster horse. And I think he'll beat Bob Olinger. But look, if you're a fan, if you're in the Henry the Bromhead camp, you're going to be fancying Bob Olinger. It's going to be a massive clash. And I just hope, unlike today where Shishkin never turned up, I do hope they both turn up and jump and get to have a race, because there's nothing worse than one disappearing out of the race early.
Ryanair Chase, still in the Alaho camp, Ruby?
I am, definitely. I hope Mellon will book out and go with him, Marie, to tell you the truth, and make it a competitive race. Alaho's probably a quieter horse than he was last year. He won this race last year by blowing his rivals. Just blew him apart at the pace he went early in the race. Obviously, the ground's going to be a bit slower tomorrow, but I hope Paul Townend jumps him out and sends him. And I think he seems to be in great form. And with a bit of luck, he'll double up or win back-to-back Ryanairs.
We were talking about the Stairs Hurdle last week in our preview, and I know that you're a fan of Champ, and you did mention that Flooring, Porter and Classical Dream both live off their nerves, and I'd imagine with that Cheltenham crowd back and the roar that it could be a difficult race for them, and what are your thoughts on it now?
Yeah, I still think it'll be the same. I mean, today, obviously, weather affects atmosphere. It's the same at every sport. And I do think Cheltenham was slightly more subdued this afternoon because of the rain. But tomorrow, they're given a fine day, and it's a sellout tomorrow. The Wednesday is actually their smallest crowd in Cheltenham. It's not capacity. It's 67,000. It sells out on the Thursday for the first time ever at 70,000 tomorrow. So it will be loud. It will be boisterous. And that will, I think, play against both Classical Dream and Flooring Porter. Now, I'm not sure the rain would really have helped Champ. We saw that with Shishkin today. I was keen on him, Marie, but I'm gone a bit lukewarm. And to be honest with you, I find it a difficult race to get a handle on. And I think if I was advising anyone to have a bet, you wouldn't be betting until you see how Flooring Porter and Classical Dream behave, and then maybe side with the one that behaves best.
Good advice, Ruby. And just finally then, the Parnell Properties Mayors and Novices Hurdle.
Yeah, look, Willie, I think Willie holds the aces here. Well, Gordon's team really fancy Party Central, but I think with all the rain that's fallen, will really suit Dino Blue, that Mark Walsh rides in the JP McManus colours, and I think she has a massive chance, even. Party Central is the one people are putting up against her, but I think the ground suits Dino Blue, and with her relative lack of experience, Marie, I think the rain will have helped, because it'll mean they'll go a bit slower and she'll find things a little easier.
Okay, Ruby, you're to give us one tip of the day for tomorrow?
Oh, I think go with the double, Marie, Gallop and Deschamp and Alaho. If you want to stay on the line there, Marie, I know we have pre-recorded this for our listeners at home, but they're turning down the hill in the bumper here at the moment. The Rachel Blackmore is three or four lengths in front on Hulan, back toward the Shea, but American Mike is coming, travelling really strongly, so is Madman's Game. Redemption Day is down the inside. Behind him is James's Gate. Fast as Vega and American Mike are coming to the fore as the bypass where the second last hurdle was. This is going to be interesting, Marie.
You did tell me to keep an eye on James's Gate.
Yeah, he's still travelling well. He's gone to the inside under Sean O'Keefe. Paul Townend and Sean O'Keefe have stayed to the very inside of the track. Jamie Codd, Patrick Mullins, Danny Mullins, Rachel Blackmore, they've all gone left to the outside of the track. But turning off the home turn, American Mike's in front. Fast as Vega is coming on his inside, still travelling strong. What's on the outside? Seabank Bistro. Yeah, Seabank Bistro, American Mike and Fast Al Vega off the Ben James's Gate is coming at them. Patrick's just gone to the front, I think. American Mike and Fast Al Vega are setting down to do battle. Willie Mullins versus Gordon Elliott. Jamie Codd versus Patrick Mullins. Patrick's gone a length in front through the wings of the last hurdle, and Fast Al Vega's pulling away. We thought he was the banker. Keep him going, Patrick. Fast Al Vega wins the last. American Mike is second. James's Gate is third, and back and forth to Seabank Bistro, Marie.
I'm pretty sure on Thursday we did talk about Fasol Vega, a horse obviously that you know so well because of Covega.
Yeah, look, her mum was a brilliant mare here for me. I won six mares hurdles on her. something Tiger Hall didn't quite manage to do today, winning six times at Cheltenham. But this fella is a superstar, Marie, and he's delivered. A great day for Willie, 3 on the card, Patrick, second of the week.
Right, well, you'll have a good night then tonight, Ruby.
That's the plan. I don't know what the plan is now, Marie, but you can just say that we pre-recorded the commentary the last night.
Right, Ruby, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Cheers, Marie.
Bye.
Thank you.
Game on.
Racing.
RTE.
2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Rise and grind and the hustle mindset aren't real. The protein in our chicken and turkey is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It is 25 past six. I'm Marie Crowe and I'm in the Game On studio with journalist David Snaid. And we're now going to talk about football and in particular Manchester United. Out of Europe after a 1-0 defeat to Atletico last night, David, and another disappointing performance. There isn't really anything else I can say to describe it.
Just normal Manchester United. Yeah. Now, that's, if you're going to describe it, that's probably the best way of doing it. It's what people have come to expect. You can go over the last 10 years, they've won 2 knockout ties in the Champions League, Fiore and Spurs. So, like, that just tells you everything. Like, there was not, like, this is the thing, like, anyone who was watching that game last night, like, there was nothing surprising in anything that happened in the game. And yes, some of the reaction and some of the behaviour from the United players during it, like Atletico Madrid are getting like painted as these like villains because of how they tried to manage the game and slowing it down and wasting time and just some of the antics. But like, that is what Diego Simeone has literally made a career out of Atletico Madrid, as well as being really, really successful when it matters. So if the United players, and this was happening from the first half where the United players were getting frustrated, like, that just tells you everything about a group of players who just were not prepared for what the challenge was to come. And
how could you not know what Atletico are going to bring?
This is the thing, and that's the worry, because this is, like, people talk about, say, the coach, like Ralph Rangnick, the interim manager. Like, you can be sure, like, the level of detail that he's so accustomed to as a sporting director, like, this would have all been made clear. But it just comes back to some of the players here again, and just not being the game intelligence, not so much intelligence, but just understanding of what's required in moments. You hear David De Gea speaking about the team who understands what was needed, went through, and that is exactly what happened. And if you're to look at a moment, I think that sums up the modern Manchester United, it's Darren Fletcher getting a yellow card on the touchline as a technical director, when only a couple of weeks earlier Ralph Rangnick is saying he's not 100% sure of what his role is in the club, but is there and helps out with the coaching. And like, this is a fella who, I think one of his previous cautions in a Champions League match, ended up missing the Champions League final, which was far more drastic. So he's now remembered for being a part of that moment there, but then also this
consistency there.
Pardon?
He's got a bit of consistency.
Yeah, and you have a bit of sympathy. But that, again, it was just surprising. Again, it just makes no sense why you would paint out that this is something that Atletico Madrid were like the villains for, when that's what they do and that's what they needed to do, because they're also struggling. This is struggling, and this isn't the side of a few years ago when they were getting the Champions League finals and were being able to topple Barcelona and Real Madrid and win La Liga. Like, this is a side who are struggling in fifth or sixth place, who have needed to find form, and they had a manager who was able to inspire that into them, and they got that goal towards the end of the first half. And from that moment on, like, even the build up to that kind of summed up, whereby obviously there was a Lange on another day, a foul could have been given, but it's not given, so you get on with the game. And yet there's fellas throwing their hands up in the air, there's like strops happening, people are giving out. Atletico keep their heads, have a quick counter, score, and United after that just never looked as if they were going to do it. Like, what was one of the stats in one of the papers where like Rafael Varane had more shots on goal than Cristiano Ronaldo. So like, how does that happen in such a big game, when Juan Mata, who's played about 170 minutes of action all season, and he is tasked with coming on to try and help salvage moments in your biggest game of the year. Like, it points to what's happening at United at the moment, where in the summer, when they will obviously get a new manager and they'll be linked with all these players, and you can be sure, because they spent over £1 billion since Ferguson left, you can be sure that they will buy new players. But that's, again, not going to be solving things.
Because they're still going to have the old players there who are in the thick of a lot of the drama. And you've Harry Maguire coming out again talking about the feuds or the lack of feuds, and saying that there isn't any, but as a team they need to do more, they need to owe to the club, they owe to the fans. I mean, stuff that shouldn't really need to be said. And then you have Marcus Rashford, who is at the centre of an awful lot of the negativity surrounding this team. And there was a confrontation with some fans outside of the stadium. And now he's released another statement just saying that things weren't as they seem and apologising and saying that he has been threatened and questioned and heckled and he was emotional and all this sort of things. And it's like different game, same story.
Yeah, it's just, it's like a circus, and it's just been following United around, and like, it's not going to stop, because like, if you look at what's happening here with all these statements coming out, and he didn't, Roy Keane say it after the Manchester derby where he was like, he can be sure players will come out with statements, and he was saying all this, and I think David De Gea was one of the first to come out, and like, but he's coming from a position of almost authority again now, because he was being questioned majorly, obviously, by Roy Keane in terms of his performances, but again, because of the nature of just how poorly they've been this year, it's all happened where some of the criticism is coming back on the club. And if you look at the kind of sense of optimism, I'd say, for a lot of Manchester United fans, that they would have been felt going back to the start of the season. If you look back when they're playing Leeds United, and obviously Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the manager before kickoff, Rafael Varane is paraded out, and the crowd is gone wild. They think they have this world class central defender which they've needed for so long. Obviously at that point Ronaldo isn't in the building. And they go and they blow Leeds away. And considering that just over a year ago they were top of the Premier League, looked as if they were able to challenge. But even you look at that moment where, as soon as they got to that point where it was serious for them, which, you know what, they're top of the league, they just hadn't got it in them to be able to maintain it. And the players, like, you can have some sympathy for some of them if they're getting, say, abused outside the stadium by fans who haven't seen the social media video, but obviously Marcus Rashford and the social media people there have obviously deemed it necessary to react to it, so I'm sure that's something that'll grow legs over in the next little while. But again, like, this isn't the inquest that needs to be had about what happened outside the stadium and what's happened on social media with Marcus Rashford. Like, the inquest that happens now is, well, will Man United get into the top four? Probably say no. If you look at what's happening with Arsenal, look at the teams who are in and around them there as well. Obviously Arsenal have a big game against Liverpool later on tonight, so like, there's so many issues that are going on with Manchester United. Even one of them has came to the fore this week again, where they're talking about possibility of having to maybe totally, not so much demolish Old Trafford, but pretty much, well, yeah, essentially redo it, and because it's not a fit for purpose in some people's eyes. So like, there's serious issues that are happening there, and they might get a fancy new manager coming in the summer, but if the structures aren't in place around them to be able to compete with a Manchester City and Liverpool, who have everything in place, like, absolutely everything. First of all, they have top class coaches in there and managers, people who can actually lead a group of players and inspire them, and that's what they've done. And look at the title race that's happening now between Man City and Liverpool, and United have never looked further away from being capable of actually competing, and yet the money they've spent and some of the optimism that was there at the start of this year, to see the level of how much that's been drained out of the club, it's quite staggering.
Do you think that Ranić has been exposed now? So when you think of even, we'll say, the triple substitution and the fact that the team didn't seem to know what to do when the changes were made, like, do you think that he is all that he was supposed to be in terms of a coaching guru?
Well, I think if you look at taking some of the substitutions, obviously part of the element of that is you make, well, three at one point, because obviously you can make five, but you have to take them a certain slot. So if he hadn't done that, maybe he was thinking, I need to keep a couple of players here in reserve because I know I'm going to have to make changes later on in the game. Bruno Fernandes would have been taken off because whether or not he would have been feeling effects of COVID, obviously he missed the previous game. But it comes back to, it's interesting to see some of the stuff that was being said by, say, Paul Scholes and Rio Ferdinand, talking about, well, how has this man got the job? But these weren't saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer got the job. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like, there is a bit of, there has to be an element here. There's been a major element of revisionism of what's happened with Ralph Rangnick. But also, if you look at it, he has actually stabilised the club in terms of results-wise. Not so much performance, because they haven't been great. But the fact that some of the fixtures have been kind to him, he's, like the Man City game, the derby, like, they were totally outclassed in that game, and they're going to have other big games coming up, another big test. They failed it against Atletico Madrid over those two legs. Like, in that first leg against Atletico Madrid, they were blessed to get out of that with a 1-1 draw. Lange scored, but there was other chances in that, and then as soon as Atletico got a few players back, they just showed their absolute class. But on Rangnick, like, this is a fella who has obviously hadn't been a manager for very long over the last, like, 10 or 11 years. But what his remit has always been, and built clubs up in Germany, has been as a sporting director. as being that of actually building from the ground up and having that project of having a few years to put things in place. And if you look, I say, when Manchester United John Morty, who's the sporting director now, well, or the football director at Manchester United, and say Richard Arnold, who's replaced Ed Woodward, they would be very big fans of Ralf Rangnick, because they would have been over to Germany and they would have seen some of the work he's done at the clubs that were there and the level of detail that he would have been able to put in place, but having a structure of coaches underneath that. The best work that he's done hasn't been, as say, a head coach winning league titles, but it's actually been given coaches a framework to work within where they've been able to actually thrive. And I suppose it would have made sense, the fact that he has this 2-year consultancy. Well, he's due to have a 2-year consultancy at Old Trafford when his interim contract runs out at the end of the season. It would be very hard to see how he could actually realistically get a job. I don't think he will. I know he joked when he first took over that isn't he might recommend himself, but I think it does make sense that if he's someone who has been in there for the last number of months and can see what needs to be done, surely he has to be listened to. And you talk to Man United fans, you probably have a list of players who want to get out the door, but it's not that simple. Although there's quite a number who are out of contract, like Paul Pogba's out of contract. I think, who else? Think, well, obviously Juan Mata, who he'll be going to, Jesse Lingard. There's players there who will be out of contract, and there'll be players who will want to leave. Like Anthony Martial's already come out this week and said he doesn't really want to be going back to Manchester United, but he's on loan at Sevilla and he has a contract at United, so it'll depend who the manager is. And the amount of leaks and the reports that have come out about players saying, well, the preferred option is Mauricio Pochettino, straight away with some Man United fans, they'll be saying, well, whoever the players want, stay clear to him, because they'll get an easy ride and they'll get exactly what they've had over the last little while, up until Rangnick has come in and actually started making a point of maybe calling out some of the behaviour in public and maybe making it a bit clear that what's going on isn't actually right, because it's been there for all to see.
There's some people as well who are Manchester United fans who are keeping an eye on Chelsea and Thomas Tuchel and how that all plays out with everything that's going on. And they are, of course, in Champions League action tonight against Lille. And it's just going to be interesting to see how they perform, because there's so much going on around this team now. And the Champions League is obviously massive. Lille, of course, aren't going to pose the biggest challenge. But, still people thought that Atletico weren't going to pose the biggest challenge either last night.
Yeah, and well, I think the fact that Chelsea have got a 2-0 lead going there, they should have more than enough after the first leg to see that through. I think anybody who's feeling any shred of sympathy for any of the players, they just feel free, because obviously the travelling expenses and all the rest of it, they have been staying in a 5-star hotel, so they will be well rested. But I think anyone who's kind of felt kind of a degree of sympathy for some of the people at the club because of everything that's happened, that was blown away with our statement about the sporting integrity and wanting to do a game with Middlesbrough in the FA Cup to be played behind closed doors, because they haven't been able to sell tickets to their own fans, even though I think they have actually been able to sell about 500 or 600 before the sanctions came in. So, football being football, remember we spoke about this regarding the whole situation with Abramovich and having to sell the club. There'll be vultures there ready to come in, wanting to get the best deal possible. And you can be sure that, by Friday, isn't it now? I think by Friday they have to have have an idea of, bidding for the club.
What's going to happen?
An offer for the club. So, there'll be people waiting there trying to pick off if it's Tuchel, if it's players. Yeah. And that's just the nature of football. And in fairness, there'll be very few people who've looked at how Chelsea have operated over the last number of years, from youth level all the way up to first team level. And I think sympathy is in short supply.
Yeah, for sure. So Sky Sports News are reporting that Gianluca Vialli is advising Nick Candy on his bid to buy Chelsea. And a little bit earlier, it was reported that the owners of Major League Baseball team, the Chicago Cubs, the Ricketts family, have confirmed they are leading a group of investors who will make a bid for Chelsea on Friday. So that is quite interesting. There is a really big Premier League game tonight as well. And you mentioned just how important it is, just in the context of the top four. So Arsenal and Liverpool, 8:15 tonight.
Oh, no. It's... Again, it feels as if it was only a couple of weeks ago that we were in here chatting about how this is going to be shaping up to be one of the best title races for years, because it's going to be three teams. And then I was actually looking, it was actually a few months ago. I thought COVID times had actually kind of messing with my head with that. But it's reminding of the title race between Liverpool and City of a couple of years ago, where it was just absolutely relentless. And the two teams, again, have just come to the fore, and you just see the levels that they're at. like just looking here now, obviously Liverpool if they win, they, like Arsenal, like this is the thing, only a while ago you would think Arsenal lot are a bit timid, they could be a bit weak, they have a bit of a soft centre. Like, fair play to Arteta. Like, if big that's time. That is not yeah. how you would describe Arsenal yeah. anymore. Like, listen, there's still frailties there. Like, there's still a bit of a work in progress. But
from that Brentford game to now, streets apart, and he made some such tough calls and put up with so much.
Absolutely, and like again, like in the context, and so much seems to be in the context of what happens at Manchester United now in the Premier League. But like, if you look at how Arteta obviously was given the job, and we did win the FA Cup as well, which seems to be forgotten. He's shown that he can actually win with this. With a group of players, but they stuck with him because there were tough times. Like there was Arsenal fans, you can be sure after their, like, I think they lost their first three games or didn't win on their first three games, calling for Arteta to go. But someone who literally believes and trusts in the processes that he has and the coaching structure that he has there, and bit by bit has been able to get the players in, get some players out. Like I think anybody who said that Aaron Ramsdale was an exceptional boy at 20 odd million from Sheffield United when they got him in, like nobody was saying that. They said, oh, this is a goalkeeper who's done okay at Sheffield United, but wasn't able to, like, you know what I mean? No one was, but he saw something in him, which is what all great managers, I think, do. And they have, they may have that eye and trust in a player. And then you look now where, like, they could really kind of put a dent in, say, Liverpool's momentum, because Liverpool have just been on an exceptional run of form. And you see City drawn away to Crystal Palace, and it almost feels as if that's a big moment. It's a huge moment. Whereas in title races of years gone by, before really City and Liverpool raised the bar to such an extent, you'd say, do you know what, a draw away from Crystal Palace isn't a bad thing, or a draw away from home or the West Ham or the Wolves, you'll take that, you'll move on. But now you have to win, and Liverpool will be going there with their tails up thinking, but we win this game, we're a point behind, we play before City at the weekend, or in the Premier League next, in the FA Cup, isn't it, at the weekend, they could be top of the league. And then it's coming around very quickly where Liverpool will have to go to the Etihad Stadium to play Man City as well. And we spoke at the top of the show about coverage and all the rest of it. Can you imagine the hype for that game? Like, how high pitched will Jamie Carragher's voice get at that game? It's going to be incredible.
Okay, well, we need to leave it there now because we have a lot more to get through. Stay with us, though. We will be doing ladies football and camogie after this very quick break.
RTE
2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to camogie, and I'm delighted to say that Adrian O'Sullivan, the Dublin camogie manager, is with me on the line, as is our regular pundit, Aoife Murray. Adrian, I'm going to go to you first. You know, we are always talking about equality and the importance of it, and it's great to have a man on there talking about camogie.
But that's it. But before we start, though, I know Aoife is there, and David was talking about Jamie Carragher there. I've had off-the-record coffees with Aoife Murray. I tell you, if you took her on a live show, you'd sell hundreds of thousands of tickets for her. So it's what the nation gets here every Wednesday night when Aoife's talking about camogie is only the watered-down version. You need to get her on the live show. So that's definitely
value
an idea for
money.
You.
Value for money is in that coffee
one. That's it. I tell you.
Well, I'm glad anyway you get on, because you know when you're bringing two people on a radio show and you're like, God, I hope they now actually get on, one from Cork, one from Dublin, but we're on safe footing anyway for sure. Adrian, we're at league final stage. It's pretty hard to believe that it's gone by so quick. For you guys with Dublin, how are you feeling about the season?
Yeah, look, I feel we've made progress, you know, and I suppose that's not just saying because we won a game in the group stage. I suppose we struggled for a win last year. We did an awful lot of work last year on defining a performance, and we've been very happy with where our numbers are versus where they were last year. So look, from that point of view, very, very happy. Of course, it's great to get a win on the board. Last year we ended up in a really tough relegation battle with Clare and Waterford, two real season teams, and came out of it by the skin of our teeth. So of course it's a relief not to have to go through that process again. So yeah, look, we're very, very, very happy with a lot of things, but a lot of work to do as well, you know.
Yeah, we were only just talking about Arteta beforehand and just how important it is, Aoife, to give a manager a bit of time and to let them build up and keep improving and move in the direction that they want to take the team, which is really important.
Yeah, and in fairness to Adrian, I suppose coming in last year, then COVID disrupting it, you have a very, very short run into your championship. I think that, you know, probably a lot of lessons were learned. And I think if you look at, in fairness, where Adrian and the team are now, you know, 226 versus 229, so only 3 points of a delta there between what they've conceded and what they've scored. That's a pretty steady league to kind of have gone through, in particularly taking in conditions that, that we've all had to, I suppose, witness over the last number of weeks. So I think, look, in fairness, I've said it before, it's really important to have, I suppose, the GAA Camogie ladies football pretty strong in the capital, so please God it'll continue.
Yeah, it really is, Adrian, because there's so much competition in the capital for all the different sports, and for such a long time the ladies football and the men's football were, you know, they're out in front really, and the Camogie and the hurling are trying to make up that ground. Just from, like, I guess being an outsider looking in, and now you're involved, like, do you feel that the ground has been made up with the hurling and Camogie here in Dublin?
Yeah, I suppose, look, you know yourself, Marie, with young children, it's not just the battle between the Gaelic sports in Dublin, is it? You know, there's a real battle for heart and mind. There's so many options, you know, and I suppose we played against Tipperary last week, and a kid growing up in Clonalty, no offence to anyone from Clonalty, but you know, they'll more than likely end up at the GA field, won't they? Whereas if you're born in Kilmacud or Tipperogue, Joe, you've 10 different sports to pick from before you even arrive down to the GA field, so that's nearly the first battle. But definitely, look, it's really important for us this weekend to showcase Dublin Camogie in Croke Park, because I suppose once those players do reach the GA field, you have that battle between ladies football and Camogie, and look, the ladies footballers have both been very successful and have got opportunities to play National League games in Croke Park in the past number of years as well, which has given them a little edge from a promotional point of view. So just purely from a promotional point of view for Dublin, and to be, I suppose, selfish about Dublin for the moment, I think it's very, very important for us to be in Croke Park for the health of the game and the capital, for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree with that as well, Aoife. When you have the young kids, the generations coming through, and you know they're regularly seeing one or two sports in the big stadiums, you know, the place that they all want to play, that seeing the Camogie teams in there as well, it's just so important for the promotion and the development of the game.
Yeah, look, I suppose we're all doubting Thomas's. We kind of need to see it to believe it to a certain extent. And I think, in particularly for Dublin, getting their chance to actually go into HQ, I think, is really, really important. They got it's going to be a really good, healthy game, so it can showcase, I suppose, where the game is and hopefully will go to. But certainly, I think, for homegrown Dublin girls, where else would you want to be playing? So I think, hopefully, we'll see a lot more of this, so that it won't become a talking point. And I suppose that's the big thing for me, Marie, is that this starts happening on a continuous basis. And this time next year, please God, if we're still chatting, that this is just, it's not even a talking point. And that's certainly, I suppose, where I want Camogie to go to.
Yeah, because interestingly, that's what happened with a lot of the ladies' football games. You know, all of a sudden it was, you know, news there was going to be a doubleheader, and then it just over time became the norm, and that's exactly what you want. But Adrian, you're going to have to go and win that now. No pressure.
Big time. Look, I suppose when we're doing video analysis and stuff with the players, we put a huge emphasis on the fact that it's okay to be critical of yourself and happy with yourself at the same time. That the two aren't mutually exclusive. And look, all we've been speaking about this week is the exact same thing. There's no point in us trying to play down the fact that it's in Croke Park, because everyone's absolutely buzzing for it. We've a team made up practically exclusively of under-21s. They've dreamt of being in Croke Park their whole life. So why would I even try to bring them down from that height? But we have to continue for the rest of the week being excited, but being completely focused on delivering a performance, because when you strip the stadium away, it's a senior Division 1 National League game that we want to go and win, and we are very much focused on the performance. So I know that might sound like a bit of a contradiction now, but I think our whole group are both excited and focused at the same time. So it's an interesting situation to be in.
So that game against Down is getting underway at 1:45 in Croke Park on Sunday, which is absolutely brilliant for everyone that will be lucky enough to go and watch that. Just in terms of the summer then, as I said, Adrian, like we're at the stage where the league final is just around the corner. We're at the business end of the league. We're only in March. Championship's going to come thick and fast. What's the plan for you guys? Do you have goals? Is that the way you work? You set them out at the start of the year, or is it every game as it comes kind of thing?
You're setting me up here now to give you a string of cliches here now. I think just before
you can be
we move
honest,
on,
you're among friends. It's grand. It's only myself and Aoife here.
No, listen. Yeah, I think there's one point, I suppose, that'd be interesting to get Aoife's thoughts on, is that there was no semi-finals in the Division One National League this year. So you have a situation where last weekend I saw Brian Dowling talking about it. Kilkenny are finished now until Leinster starts at the end of April, start of May. So I just don't know why they couldn't have played knockout games in the Division 1 league as well, and giving everyone something to play for, you know. We knew even going into the Tipperary game on Saturday that even if we could get a win out of it, we needed an exceptional set of circumstances to stay in the league. And to be going into that in your third game isn't really great. But to go back to your question, I suppose, look, we do genuinely take it game by game. We did a huge amount of work with Ray Boyne last year on defining a performance and being able to consistently deliver a performance. So we're just focused on that. How well can we hit our key numbers, and can we replicate that from game to game? And then look, the outcomes will look after themselves then once you're doing that. But we are very excited for the summer because we have such a young team. We're very much looking forward to getting them onto the dry ground and the nice weather and seeing how they can flourish, because we've played some great stuff at times during the year. But look, as you saw yourself there, the conditions have been pretty poor at times as well. So it hasn't been conducive to good hurling. But look, we're very much looking forward to the summer, and hopefully we'll have a good championship.
Yeah, I hope it's a good championship all round. And Aoife, before we finish up, so Cork are already through now to the final, and they will be playing either Tipperary or Galway. Who do you expect to go through?
Genuinely, I'm completely torn. If I go slightly more towards Hearts, you probably would go with Tipperary, because it would be great to see them in a final, and I think that might set up the championship in a really healthy way. It might give them that little boost with regards to maybe that semi-final. That semi-final barrier that they keep hitting every year. So in a way, if I just go completely my heart for Camogie, I would probably push for Tipperary. But Galway getting the Sarsfield girls back, they're going to, I suppose, strengthen that side. In fairness, Cotavan, Mary Ryan, etc. only came back last week. I think this should be a cracker of a game. I think we'll learn a huge amount about Tipperary because of the way they've gone through. They've blitzed the league so far. So I think it's going to be really good. And I think if it is Galway come out, they'll have the advantage for the final, because their last game in the league is the 27th of March, 2 weeks before the final. Corker finished last Saturday, as Adrian said, and they've got, is it four weeks, is it, to the league final. So, you know, look, it goes to say to Adrian's point, it would have been brilliant to have had a semi-final. And I think, you know, even seeing Dublin or Down or who Dublin in the semi final, it would have been a great, great day. And I'm more so focused looking ahead of the championship and giving those teams that maybe that little bit of a boost, a little bit of an appetite for semi finals and finals. But look, I'm completely 50-50 regarding Galway and Tipperary. Look, please God, it might be Tip and it'd be a great old final.
Yeah, it really would. Okay, guys, thank you so much for joining us. We are going to take a very quick break, and then we're back with the Nadine Doherty talking ladies football.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Nadine Doherty is with me on the line to look ahead to the ladies' football semi-finals. Nadine, we got two interesting ones anyway, that's for sure, and probably a little bit unexpected. So you have Dublin, fair enough, you expected them to be there, but Donegal played very defensively over the last few games, but they must be happy enough to be in that semi-final.
Yeah, I suppose you would look at Donegal's group would have been perceived as the easier group. You know, Galway were disappointing as well as the Westmeath. But yeah, Donegal would be thrilled for their armoury, definitely. The league was never going to be a focus for them, you know, with the championship so far away. And in comparison to Dublin, look, they've got the job done without hugely impressing. So yeah, and look, Dublin always there. They're the standard bearers for Donegal, and any time Donegal go out to start a season, it's Dublin they're chasing. Everything revolves around them, so they're definitely going to be up for this match.
They are still Dublin though, and it is a league semi-final, and they've been evolving and adding to their team and strengthening it and adapting to throughout the season. It's almost everything that you expect a Dublin team to do.
Yeah, Marie, they've just been brilliant so far. You know, we did question that first week when we were chatting with Ruby about their bite, but they have answered that question and just absolutely flipped it. They're bringing their usual physical presence now, their defensive intent on their 21 playing on the age is brilliant. And Leah Caffrey, for me, is the best player in the country at the minute. You say, you know, new additions to their players, absolutely. You have Nicole Owens coming back, been phenomenal. Jess Tobin, Kate McDade, all strengthening their team. But I think what Mick Bowen has shown us yet again, what a great manager he is. He has new additions to his management team. He has Cleen O'Connor in there. You know, showing Mick's really self-aware. He knows that he needs new voices, new ideas to keep things fresh. And last week I spoke about it. Their attack and play against Meath was so interesting. You talk about a team adapting to what's in front of them. In the past, we've seen, you know, Dublin plough through the middle, off the shoulder. It didn't work for them against Meath. So they basically spread out their front six, hug the sideline, hug the touchline, look for the ball over the top, and it worked brilliantly for them.
In our second semi-final, Meath versus Mayo. Meath, Eamon Murray saying that he, if he got into a league semi-final, it'd be beyond their wildest dreams. I'm not so sure about that now, just given the standards that they've probably set for themselves. But it'd be an interesting one as well.
Yeah, I think Eamon, he got away with that last year. I think that he needs to stop that this year. You know, they're huge ambitions. His players are saying it. Monica McGurk has come out and said, you know, they're aiming to do even better than last year, defending All-Ireland champions. They have to be looking to go to the top. I haven't been overly impressed by them this year because of the high standards they set last year, but they're due a huge, huge game. I think they're going to be tested by Mayo, to be honest, because, you know, Mayo have probably been the most entertaining team this year. Again, new players have been fantastic, Sinead Walsh in particular.